Sugya series number 25. The topic, of course, family dynamics and observance, which is a common challenge that we all have. People are different, and therefore, by definition, we approach things at different paces. There are things that we find more appealing, faster, and how do you handle people's different levels of interest at different paces? But I'd like to work through, I'll give you the overview first, the background, where this challenge comes from. And on the second side, very clear perspectives of how we're going to approach some of the challenging situations. Let's jump straight in. Quote number one. The background, the concept of tshuva. What's happening today in the Jewish world has pretty much not happened in the entire history of the Jewish people. Typically, in Jewish history, there was mainstream Judaism. People jumped off. They created different sects. Sects such as the Tzedukim, sects such as Christianity, the Jewish part of Christianity in its original form. Sects. And basically, for the most part, you never heard from them again as Jews. There were examples of Jews that actually lapsed in observance to some degree and then came back. The Maranos were an example of that, but they never really gave up Judaism to begin with. They were kind of forced because they were afraid of being burned at the stake. But to really have people lapse in observance almost out of free choice, societal pressure, but basically out of free choice, they did choose that. And then either they or their children to choose to come back so that you'd have great-grandparents who observed Shabbat, and everybody likes to hold their pictures in their wallet. This is my great-great-grandfather. And then you have children, grandchildren, for some reason, weren't keeping Shabbat. And then a generation today is suddenly moving back towards observance, is a unique phenomenon to our generation. If you study Torah, though, the prophets spoke about it happening exactly as we're experiencing it. Number one, it will be when all these things will come upon you, the blessing and the curse that I have presented before you, then you will take it to heart amidst the nations that Hashem your God has dispersed you. You will return to Hashem your God, listen to His voice, according to everything that I commanded you today, you and your children, with all your heart, with all your soul. Blow me away! You will return? You mean I wasn't observing, for whatever reason, and suddenly I'm returning. Where's such a thing come from? And we have a very powerful concept in Judaism that Hashem loves us. And He wants us back. And He wants that relationship that we all describe. Whichever mitzvah we pick, it doesn't matter. Hashem wants us. I've often felt sometimes working in Cherry Hill that I relate to all families basically the same. I call someone up, I hear they're interested in learning, I give a class, and I feel sometimes like Hashem is pointing to a family and says, the Katzes over there, Cherry Hill, I want them back. And that's quote one. Hashem decides, I would like you back as part of the active Jewish family. I don't want you straying. And that's a promise. I want you back. Number two, Behold, days are coming, Hashem says. I will send a famine in the land. Not a famine for food, nor a thirst for water, rather a desire to hear the word of Hashem. Days are coming. And the prophets generally, when they say, they're talking long term. They're talking in the distance. It's a prophecy in the end of days. And finally, number three, we have a tradition that Eliyahu, the prophet, will come back. Eliyahu never died. He ascended in a fiery chariot to heaven. Eliyahu is going to come back before the times of Mashiach, and he's going to help us relate better to Hashem so that Mashiach should come. Number three, behold, I send to you Eliyahu the prophet before the great and awesome day of Hashem. He will return the hearts of fathers with their sons and the hearts of sons with their fathers. We get our first foreshadowing here of conflict in the family. Fathers came first, and they're going to schlep their sons along. Sons, the second generation came first, and they're going to schlep their fathers along. And that's all a preparation so that the Jewish family should be complete. Eventually, Mashiach will come. So we have a historical perspective under the title Background, that this time period and the conflicts that we're going to experience were prophesied generations ago. Compounding the challenge that we have is that there's a very specific series of mitzvahs that we should try to influence others towards observance. And this is a very important, touchy concept. There are two primary reasons that a person would try to influence somebody else towards observance. Anybody suggest what they are?
You increase your own merit by doing that?
Good. Why do you increase your own merit? Good. Why does Hashem want you to do that? I love being difficult. Let's get to the core. Because Hashem loves that other Jew also. And He wants you to be bothered by the fact that that other Jew is missing out a major component of the purpose of his life. He doesn't know about Shabbat. Doesn't know about the laws of Shatnez that you're not supposed to wear woolen linen together. So instead of wearing the clothing of a Jew, let's say a man would put on a pair of tzitzis, this guy is purposely wearing wool and linen together. I mean, not purposely, but out of ignorance. Hashem wants you to go out and tell him, somehow, we'll have to discuss how, but there's a mitzvah to share the mitzvah with him out of goodness, out of benevolence, out of feeling that he's truly missing something. Okay? That's a good reason to share mitzvahs. What's a bad reason to share mitzvahs?
Bad reason?
Uh-huh. You wanted to hear something novel this morning, right?
How could be bad to share mitzvahs?
Okay.
Maybe the way you do it.
Let's say I have my style of life. My style of life happens to be religious observant Jew. It bothers me that there's a guy on my block who doesn't fit the clique. So I decide I'm going to influence him in order that we should have our clique so that I feel more comfortable. If I'm doing it because Hashem wants me to do it, because I will gain merit, because I'm doing a good thing by sharing a good thing with somebody else, So the essence of that relationship, of influencing that person to do mitzvahs, is love. I love you, and I feel you're missing something in your life. I'd like to share it with you. You don't know how to read Hebrew? So I'd like to show you, because if you read prayers in the original, you'll get enormous satisfaction, and you'll be making a much greater impact in your prayers. Closer relationship with Hashem that I feel you're missing, and I'd like to help you with it. If, however, I try the second approach, it's basically a self-serving approach. I'd like to live my life comfortably with yes people around me. And you're not a yes person! So I'm going to make sure you're a yes person. And I will pour on the guilt whenever I see you going into a non-kosher restaurant because you're breaking the click. Not a healthy relationship to influence somebody else for self-serving purposes. Why do I bring up such a dramatic thing? Because when you take it down to the very localized family level, we are humans. And we always have to challenge ourselves politely why we're trying to do anything that we're doing. You have this with every mitzvah. You have to appreciate that observant Jews are very self-critical. For example, there was a great rabbi who used to give charity generously. One day he stopped giving charity. People used to come to his house, knock on the door. He used to give generously, and suddenly he stops. After about 2 weeks, he started giving again. His students asked him, what was that about? He said, I started realizing that I was giving charity for self-serving purposes. It made me feel good. It made me feel proud. It made me feel powerful. And that's not good. That's not why you give charity. And he felt he had no choice but to stop, to reassess, to rethink the whole positioning, and then to start again with a fresh slate. And you find that very often in relationships, that you could hit a conflict, and it could be your motives were correct, but it could also be that a little bit of humanity slipped into your motives. And the correct approach is to take a step back, rethink your motives, and make sure that when we're trying to encourage others or influence others or create a framework by which there'll be more observance in the world, I have to make sure that your motives are pure. Again, I'm not critiquing, but that's a self-searching process that we do by every single mitzvah. And in this particular mitzvah, if you don't do it, it can have very bad results. Because if you don't do it correctly in charity, so I guess the poor person will go to someone else if he feels insulted. He feels you're becoming haughty. He'll go to someone else. But when you're dealing with family relationships, you can't afford to have anything else slip in. And reprimanding kids is a common example. Are you reprimanding them because they're not conforming? And you're making it harder for the family dynamic. We just can't deal with you. Or you're really caring for the kid. It's not safe to run in the street. It's not healthy for you to have such a loss of self-discipline, to have no self-control. And the motive is always very important.